Hello and welcome to the Blockade Runner podcast number 249. My name is John. Joining me this morning is Ryan. What's up, Ryan?
Good morning. The big 249 today.
I thought you were going to say the big face, you know, because my camera's all close up on me today. But yeah, the big 49. Big 49. We're closing in on 250, which will be next week or something like that. Yeah. Next week-ish. Yeah, day one-ish. Ryan, we are today going to talk about the final episode of season 3 of The Mandalorian. So, you know, our podcast, like I think a lot of others, once there's a Disney Plus show on every week, we're just mainly talking about, you know, the new episode of the show. So It will be interesting to go back to being a Star Wars podcast without a weekly episode of television coming up here in May. But for right now, we're going to finish up our look at Mandalorian Season 3 and discuss Chapter 24, The Return.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we'll be too hard up for content, though, because next Friday is Jedi Survivor, and then it's May 4th, and...
Star Wars Visions, Part 2.
Yeah. There'll be things for sure.
It's true. And did you know May is also a big anniversary for Return of the Jedi as well?
Yeah. Back in theaters. Is it in
next
May
weekend? That it's coming? Okay. No, next weekend. Yeah. Like the weekend of the 28th or something like that. So, Ian in our Discord has been talking about that quite a bit. He was actually suggested that we do some Return of the Jedi focused episodes in May, which I think is a good idea. But also he's been chatting in there about the showings for Return of the Jedi next weekend. And I am like waiting. I guess maybe it's the same for him, but I'm waiting for my local theaters to post the showtimes and the tickets for next weekend. And I keep checking, especially this theater in Elgin that I want to go to, and nothing yet. So I guess sometime this week I'll make plans to go see Return of the Jedi, but I'm definitely planning on doing that next weekend.
Yeah, I'm not seeing any for Denver yet. Oh wait, yeah, there's a bunch, but they're not theaters I really want to go to. So we'll see. I may end up just watching that 4K Blu-ray instead.
You want to go to the Alamo Draft House to see Return of the Jedi.
And it's all AMC theaters that are showing it here. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, don't want to spend too much time talking about movie theaters, but I have been going out of my way to not go to AMC theaters around here lately because they've been really irritating me. And we've got a nice alternative nearby, so I've been doing that instead. Yesterday, I went to see Evil Dead Rise, which was cool. Yeah, and definitely going to go to Return of the Jedi next weekend sometime, somewhere. So excited for that. And as you said, Jedi Survivor, Ryan, I just this morning purchased the digital version of Jedi Survivor, have it all set up and ready to go for whenever it wants to download and preload and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's a big one.
Is it
144 gigs?
Oh,
on PS5 at least. Which is where I'm grabbing it. You're on Xbox Series S.
I'm on Xbox Series S. Yes.
So yours should be significantly smaller, which is.
I don't know, but do they do? I don't think they do different versions for S and X, do they? They just have they do.
Yeah, because it's the. Lower textures.
Yeah, I know that it can't output the same visuals and stuff, but I like, for instance, if you were to go buy the game on a disc. Oh, wait, that doesn't actually work because there is no Xbox Series S disc drive. So, okay, interesting. Right. It's just but if I go to the Xbox store, for instance, to buy a game, we don't need to talk about this on our podcast, but when I do that, there's the Xbox One version, and there'll be the download for the Series S X version. You know what I mean? So I don't know. That's interesting. Okay. I'll look into that. I'm curious now. I only have about 300 gigabytes available on my Xbox, so should be enough, but, not tons of room. Hey, let's talk about The Mandalorian. There's a lot to look forward to in Star Wars going forward.
Real quick, though.
Yeah.
Xbox Series X Jedi Survivor, 140 gigabytes. Xbox Series S, 44 gigabytes.
44? Wow. Okay, yeah. Sweet. Cool.
Yeah.
All right, that's good. Mm-hmm. My data cap for my cable internet will be, you know, that's good for my data cap, I guess. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Hey. Yeah. Anyway, let's return to our actual topic of conversation here, which is The Mandalorian Chapter 24, The Return, aka the season finale of The Mandalorian Season 3. Start with overall impressions. Been chatting with you all week, Ryan, about Star Wars, and I think you were pretty into this one, right?
Yeah. For me, it was, you know, a great way to wrap up a great season. It felt like all the story threads kind of coalesced into this finale, and pretty much everyone got their, like, hero moments, and, you know, it kind of wrapped up characters' arcs for this season. In a pretty satisfying way. I think, you know, there wasn't like a big surprise in there, which I think, you know, some people were maybe a little disappointed by or were expecting. No big tease or like cliffhanger for the next season or anything. I mean, I guess that may be arguable, but not in the kind of traditional sense. Like, you don't have, you know, the post-credits Thanos scene or something here, like, setting up, like, the next big bad. It just kind of, like, wrapped up everyone's story and was like, hey, we have a new status quo now, and where it goes is anyone's guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you had predicted last week that they would definitely do a post-credit scene, right?
I did.
That was like, yeah. Yep, so yeah. No post-credit scene. Yeah, I agree with
not
you.
Mad.
I think not mad.
Not no. mad.
No. I think that it didn't have a cliffhanger. I think it provided a lot of indication of where the next season may be headed, but it didn't like have a big cliffhanger, like, oh my god, I can't wait until the next season starts so I can find out what's going to happen with whatever element. It really tied up most of those story threads, like you said. So that was cool. Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. I enjoyed the season a lot overall. I enjoyed the finale quite a bit. I found it, I don't think underwhelming is the right term, but like, and I didn't need any big surprises or, you know, big appearances from new characters or anything like that. I think it was good, but yeah, I thought it was a good concluding episode, but it didn't hit that next level for me where I was like super hyped about it afterwards or anything like that. I mean, I thought it was good, but
yeah. It there was like a lot of restraint shown, I think, because I think like you could have easily had like the, you know, a Thrawn stinger at the end, or you know, whatever, like some like cryptic message about cloning or, you know, whatever kind of thing at the end. But I don't know, I've been thinking about this a lot, and I think the like the post credits stuff and really kind of, it was exciting at first with like the MCU, because like, you know, there were just those early years where it was like who are we going to see on screen next? Like, this is just exciting. If like, you know, I grew up reading Marvel comics, and you know, it was really fun to be like, whoa, this character is coming in live action soon, and like that sort of thing. But after a while, I feel like that sort of stuff kind of diluted like the impact of the film you just watched, because it's like, wow, these characters like really overcame like whatever, and like they changed in these ways, and like, oh, no rest for the wicked, because now there's, like, this thing. And, like, you know, it's like the Malibu Stacy thing where it's like, man, I love these characters. They're my favorite characters. Oh, look over there. There's a new character. Now they're my favorite, like, kind of thing. It's like, who cares about, like, these characters I just spent 2.5 hours watching a movie about because there's this next guy. And so, yeah, it started to just feel, and it just felt like this endless cycle where the characters weren't actually growing or changing because they, like, weren't allowed to, because they were just on this, like, treadmill. And so I really, really appreciated, specifically the ending of this episode, just, like, ending with, like, a sense of, like, relative peace and, you know, tranquility, which is, like, so rare for, like, big budget genre fiction these days.
Mm. Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. I completely agree with the, you know, the fact that they showed restraint and it's more tasteful and more to my taste specifically to not be like, you know, hey, here's the next, you know, new thing or whatever. I do think though, like, cause I've been trying to figure out, well, why didn't this one hit, you know, for me quite as much as the other two season finales, you know, and, not to, you know, bring them up constantly on this episode, but our friend Ian, had written in our Discord that he thought this was the strongest of the three, or at least for mm-hmm. him, it was his favorite of the three finales. And I think you might've said that you agreed, Ryan.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. I do. Yes, you do. Right. So I'm, you know, just, kind of wondering why it's not like working quite as well for me. That's not the right way to put it, but that it just didn't hit me emotionally maybe, or just didn't hit me like with the same level of satisfaction. And then mm-hmm. I was thinking back to the previous two season finales, you know, and the first one's like Din almost dies and there's like this, you know, IG-11 makes this, or IG-12, IG-12 makes this big sacrifice. IG-11.
Yeah.
No, IG-11 is the one from the...
11 is the original. Oh. 12 is the Gundam.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Okay. Mm-hmm. My bad. Mm-hmm. Wow, this is wild because now I can't even remember. Like, it's IG-8?
IG-88. Who's the original IG? Who is Agile.
88. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
Agile. Watch out for him in Shadows of the Empire.
Yeah. And that's the thing we say to each other all the time. IG-88 is Agile, you know, and then I mm-hmm. couldn't remember his name there for a moment because IG-12 and 11 have been on the brain so much lately. But anyways, there's these big emotional kind of moments and beats at the end of the season one finale and then the end of the season two finale. I mean, there's Christmas ornaments of moments from the season two finale. You know what I mean? Like they're mm-hmm. iconic, epic moments. Like, and I don't think that like this finale has to have something like that or whatever. It's fine. And I think, you know, but I do think, I don't know, like the scene at the end with Grogu being adopted and all that, you know, that's a very emotional thing and a great little moment, but it just didn't, I don't know, it just didn't hit me. I've watched it twice now. It just didn't really just hit me that hard, I guess. And maybe it's mm-hmm. because this season was less about those two specifically and more about this big ensemble thing. Maybe that's part of it also, but yeah, I really liked it. I understand, I think, most of the choices they made about wrapping everything up this season and how they did it. I think it's a satisfying conclusion, but it just didn't wow me, I guess, overall.
Yeah, I think, and that's probably like just a difference in the way you and I watch things, because I think like you look for those emotional beats a little bit more.
Yeah.
Like you want to cry when you're watching Star Wars.
Yeah. And it's not that hard either. It happens a lot.
Yeah, and it doesn't happen for me. Like I'm, I guess, more, I don't know, pragmatic, whatever. When it comes to this stuff where, like, I want to see, like, character arcs and themes, like, you know, ending in, like, a satisfying way. And then, like, I watch that and I'm like, yeah, that's the good shit. That's what I like when when these stories, like, wrap up like this. So, okay. Yeah, but, yeah. I wouldn't, I mean, it was, for me, like a completely kind of, like, emotionless experience, but like that's not necessarily like a bad thing, like and I'm Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I thought it was, there were emotional moments, but they just weren't as impactful to me personally.
They didn't
but
lean into them like in a way that, you know, in like very cynical terms, you could call like in a manipulative way.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, we'll talk about some of those when we get to them, I guess. Mm-hmm. Why don't we kind of move into just going through the episode sort of scene by scene or, you know, section by section. It, of course, picks up right where the last episode left off.
Coldest of opens.
Well, Axe Wolves is getting extremely cold as he's like flying headfirst into the upper atmosphere and then to that capital ship up there, right? So,
yeah.
We had been talking too earlier this week about the whole spy thing, you know, and a lot of people, we recorded last weekend. I wasn't even thinking about that spy stuff at all. We didn't talk about it at all in the episode, like who's the spy? Yeah. That didn't occur to me really at all. And then at work and just talking to friends and stuff, people would bring up that to me, like, who's the spy? And I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, and they're like, well, the episode was called The Spies, plural. And I was like, oh, you're right. It was called that. Yeah. I didn't even think about that. But it turns out, like, I don't think there was much to that. At least in terms of breadcrumbing or trying to be some big hint at what's to come. But I was thinking as Axe Wolves is cruising up to this capital ship here, like, okay, what's he going to do when he gets up there? And as soon as he gets up there, he's like, okay, all of you guys go down there, act as reinforcements. I'll stay up here with the capital ship, just me and the ship. You know what I mean? Everybody else go down there. And I'm like, ooh, he's the spy, right? Oh. Were you thinking that as it was happening the first time? You weren't thinking that?
No. Nope.
Okay. But you didn't have people at work asking you all week, like, who's the spy though, right?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
No, I didn't.
So, okay. Yeah. So I guess that'll be a theme here. Cause like there were a few moments where I was like, ooh, this is who the spy is going to be. But it was weird. Cause it's like not even something I thought about. It was something that came to me later.
I thought about either. And I don't know. Like I actually don't have a good explanation for why that episode was called The Spies. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I don't know either. I mean, so obviously Elia Kane is a spy very mm-hmm. clearly in the beginning. But then who else could be thought of as spies in that episode? I don't know. I mean, they had the Shadow Council meeting, and I guess anybody there could be thought of as a spy potentially, like who's going to go back to Thrawn and say, you know, this person's not totally, you know, all those people are always, you know, potentially going to second guess one another or double cross one another or something like that. So, but anything I could come up with for like why it's called the spies plural feels like a stretch, you know?
Yeah.
Like if I really want to do some intellectual gymnastics or whatever, I can, you know, come up with some argument for why so-and-so could be another spy or whatever, but it just, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure what that was about, but I don't think it was about the fact that somebody is a spy in this episode, at least so far didn't, you know, with this episode and this season being over, it doesn't feel like it's going that way. And we talked about it, you know, over text message, like I cannot see, or I think it's unlikely that, you know, in April of 2023, they named an episode The Spies, because then in like October of 2024 or February of 2025 or whenever this show comes back, mm-hmm. you know, it's going to be like, do you remember when we put that S on the end of the title a year and a half ago? Here's why. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, I mean, you say that, but they mm-hmm. did tease the Boba Fett thing like really early in season one. And then that didn't come around, and people were like, those were Boba Fett's boots. And then it didn't come around until, you know, beginning of season two.
Right, right. That's true. And, yeah.
I didn't love that, really. and I don't think I would, like, I mean, we've talked ad nauseum about, like, you know, is the armor going to turn or whatever? You know, is this 4D chess or whatever? And like, that still just doesn't ring right to me. Like every episode that goes by, that seems like more and more ridiculous. And I mean, I still hope they don't do that, but also, you know, there is a good way to tell that story. But I think like the sudden surprise of, you know, one of these Mandalorians, you know, turning heel, like I don't think it will work.
Yeah, I agree. And we can talk more about it when we get to the discussion of like the kind of final threads or moments of the episode, because mm-hmm. I think it will lend itself to that conversation. It'll come up there. But yeah, I agree. I think it seems like everybody came together, you know, that mm-hmm. that seems to be what this season ended up being about and this episode ended up being about. So, yeah. The other thing that, you know, was obviously started in the previous episode that needed to be addressed or dealt with here is Din being, you know, that was kind of a cliffhanger, right? They had a cliffhanger from episode 7 to 8, mm-hmm. not one from season 3 to season 4, but yeah, Din had been captured and separated from everybody else. And so, I thought it was, I mean, I don't know if you agree. I thought it was like slightly anticlimactic that like this episode opened up and it was just like, oh, cool, they captured me. I guess it'll take me 3 seconds to free myself and like battle these guys, you know? I don't know that they should have done it any other way necessarily, but it just felt like he got captured. We waited a week and then it was like not really a big deal that he got captured because he just very easily freed himself, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that was like a fairly, you know, I don't know if the intent of that scene was to like create like a really dramatic tension over the course of 7 days of like, will Din be okay? I don't even remember. Did we even like talk about it last week? Like him being captured?
So you're right that like nobody on Earth would be like, maybe he dies next week, you know, maybe he doesn't get out of it. Like, of course he's going to be fine. But I still think, you know, just from an in-world, in-story perspective, like you're putting that character in dire straits, like in a difficult situation. And, you know, I almost kind of feel like, what's the point of doing that if it's going to be no big deal to escape? You know what I mean? So
I'd agree with that.
Like, yeah, yeah.
It was like, I mean, there was, honestly, like it started and I was like, oh yeah, he was captured. Like, because it was not even like top of mind, and then I'm like, okay, now he's free, it's fine. Like,
but see, I do love the moment after though, because the moment after is like he frees himself, but then I think the Praetorians come in, and it's like, okay, well, he actually is gonna, or the Praetorians are the ones who have him. I don't know, but anyway, he frees him. No. It's the Dark Troopers that have him, right?
Yeah,
those are the ones he takes out. But then as soon as he does that, the Praetorians come in. And at that point, he is going to lose, right? They're going to kill him. And then you hear, and I thought this was really well directed from Rick Famuyiwa and just like really well done, but you hear the voice of no, 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 you know, and then you see IG-12 and Grogu pulls those Praetorians away from Din to, you know, basically to save him, right? And I thought that was great. So I don't know. I almost feel like maybe it would have been better if they would have just had Din, like those guys pull him into a room, they get ready to kill him, and then Grogu saves him or something, you know, rather than like showing Din. It just felt like it was really telling us like, oh, it wasn't really that dire of a situation because he just got right out of it. And it becomes a dire situation, I guess, after that. So maybe that undoes my point. But it just in the moment watching the episode, I really felt like, wow, that was no big deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think like there was like a moment when Grogu came in, I was like, oh, that's nice. But then I was like, wait, where was he?
Was he?
And then I was like, whatever, it's Star Wars, and like just moved on. But like,
I like the moment so much that I'll excuse the fact that like, wait, what? You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter to me because it was fun.
Was he just like walking around those hallways in his Krang suit?
Like, I mean, he should have been with everybody else, shouldn't he? Like, I don't know. I'd have to go back and watch the end of the previous one, but
through the cracks,
right? Because I thought he was with everybody else and got separated behind that blast door, you know, and they all went the opposite way. But it's the power of you know, a child's love for their father. Like, he's going to get their hell in high
Maybe
water
he just
to save.
Busted through that blast door.
You know, he could have used the Force. Yeah. Yep.
There'll be a comic about it.
Yeah. Hope not. But yeah, so from there, you know, Din has a nice sort of moment with Grogu because he's like, okay, if we don't stop Gideon now, he's never going to stop coming after us or coming after you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to need you to be brave, he tells him. And Grogu, you know, nods or whimpers or whatever and kind yeah. of indicates like, yep. So I thought that was a nice moment. It was, again, I don't want to spend the whole episode being like, I don't understand the logic here necessarily, but, you know, he's like on the phone with Bo-Katan and he's like, so Grogu and I have to just go do this by ourselves, okay? Like, you guys are, you know, within a rocket blast of, you could all come here right now with me and help me do this. You know what I mean? I mean, I guess they had a lot of Dark Troopers to fight, and maybe them being kind of having their separate battle with the Dark Troopers, you know, allows Din to kind of take on Gideon by himself, but... It sort of felt yeah. like, why are you doing this? Just you and your baby are going to go do this by yourself? It seems like you're really asking for trouble, you know?
Yeah, I think it was, I mean, you could probably argue this for, like, every time Star Wars does this sort of thing, which I think is one of the highlights of the episode for me, is that, like, classic Star Wars, like, battle on three fronts.
Yeah, cross-cutting between the three battles, yeah.
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, in probably any of those situations, like, if you go back to, like, you know, the ones in, you know, Rogue One or Return of the Jedi or, you know, wherever this has occurred, you could probably be like, wait, why don't they just go over to here and do this thing instead? But what it does is it, like, creates just, like, a fun, very, like, Star Wars-y, like, action sequence. And, you know, it's just entertaining to watch, like, cutting through, like, everyone fighting their own sort of fight and then, like, converging in some way, like, at the end.
Yeah, 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 for sure, for sure. And I don't know, I guess I think part of it, though, is, like, I don't often find myself kind of taken out of the experience by asking those kinds of questions, like, in Star Wars, like, I don't, you know... But there's a lot of variables, like the fact that I saw Return of the Jedi for the first time, who knows how old I was, and, you know, everything else. But I think usually, I don't know, it might just be a me thing, I suppose. But usually I feel like it's a little smoother where I'm not, like, asking myself those questions. And then I feel like I'm going along for the ride a little bit more. And then I think part of maybe why some of the emotional moments weren't hitting me quite as hard is because there were quite a few little things here and there that kind of, you know, pulled at me a little bit where I was, like, not totally, you know what I mean? I don't want to say I wasn't invested, but I wasn't immersed all the time necessarily because there were little things like that. Like, you know, why, I don't know, you're talking to her and she's, like, she seems to be, like, she has her ability to, they could come over and help you, you know what I mean? And you're like, I gotta do it myself. It's just it was a little weird. But I definitely agree with your point that, like, what that sets up is, you know, works out really well and you know, creates this great, like, classic Star Wars finale action sequence, which was very enjoyable for sure. Yeah. Speaking of enjoyable action sequences, did you enjoy R5 fighting mouse droids? I thought that was pretty funny. I like that.
Huge Attack of the Clones vibes. Attack of the Clones R2 stuff happening here. There's, like, you know, the ridiculous, like, fight scenes. There's like astromech flying. Very, very Attack of the Clones here. Yeah, I don't know. I don't have an opinion either way.
Well, the whole sequence, Din, is really counting on R5 to assist him and, like, putting a lot of trust in R5, which I think is, you know, just knowing how Din kind of feels about droids, I guess, or whatever, is good. He does kind of ping pong back and forth, it seems, about, you know, in terms of how he feels about droids, because, like, at the end of season one, he obviously overcame that, I guess, but then, like, season two, he doesn't like him again, and then, you know, he's kind of, I feel like he ping pongs. Like, sometimes it's like he seems like he's got this big issue with droids, and sometimes it seems like he doesn't. But there were times in this season where he certainly was, multiple times, right, where he was, like, kind of reluctant to trust droids, or he didn't want to see IG-12 brought back. And, you know, so as I was watching, I feel like there was multiple moments where Din was asking R5 for assistance, and not only asking him for assistance, but doing so kind of tenderly. And like with like, I felt like there was a lot of trust and admiration.
A lot of
between
use
them.
Of the word buddy.
Yeah.
A lot
of
buddy
exactly.
going on.
Yeah.
That was very noticeable.
Right. So in a season of this show that was sort of, I think, frequently asking the question, can people change? Can they get over their hangups? You know, mm-hmm. can they grow? I would say that's an example of that for Din. Even though I feel like he's kind of already grown in that way multiple times before.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, it's a little redundant at this point to, like, go back to that. But you're right. Like, he also, you know, he was kind of a jerk to R5 at the beginning, so.
Right. Yep. So I think from there, it cuts back to Axe Wolves, who is up on that capital ship, and he's having some hero moments. He's grabbing onto that captain's chair as that ship is being overwhelmed by enemy ships, and he has the idea that he's going to crash this ship down into the base, which is pretty crazy, pretty wild. Mm-hmm. And I will say again, at first, it felt like a double cross, like the whole plan with the ship and all that. I'm going to go to the ship on my own. But then from there, it felt like, oh, is this a suicide mission? Is he going to go down with the ship there? Because he was like just sitting in that pilot's chair, just like, I mean, it was being overwhelmed, and he was like holding on tight. And I feel like he even closed his eyes to be like, this is it, you know? So I was like, oh, maybe he's just doing like a suicide mission type thing up there.
A hold-on maneuver.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's not that. Also, sometime on the show, maybe we can dig into the etymology of the phrase "holdo maneuver" and how people use it and what it means. Because I feel like it's come to mean the thing she does in The Last Jedi, but I don't think that's what it is. Because they talk about the holdo, battle of whatever holdo, the holdo maneuver, holdo. You know, that's before she does the thing in The Last Jedi. And it's not like she's doing that all the time.
Because that's, no, you're right. Because it's something she did before that elevated her rank.
Yes. But I guess the thing she does in The Last Jedi is even cooler than the original Holdo maneuvers. So it just like replaces the term, maybe?
Yeah. I mean, I was just using it as a stand-in for like a Star Wars stand-in for like a suicide maneuver where the captain goes down with the ship. But like, yeah, it's not exactly that, and it because she doesn't commit suicide multiple times.
That's a good point. Yeah,
and it's also not the like slicing through the ship thing.
But I think that's how people use it. That's how people use it in conversation, though, which is fine. Yeah. I'm just being a little so and so.
Words. The evolution of words etymology was the, you know, we got the origin, and then how it's used now, perhaps incorrectly, you know, compared to the origin, but people, you know, you kind of understand what people are talking about.
And what's correct can be changed through usage. You know what I mean? Like if a culture, if a people, if a society uses a word or a phrase a certain way, you know, repeatedly, consistently, then that it can become correct, or it can become the new, you know what I mean, whatever. Okay, let's talk about the cool battle sequence between the Mandalorian Din Djarin and the dark troopers that are behind barrier shields, which R5 unlocks for him, you know, in a row. Subsequently.
Yeah, so, okay, you are, like, starting to get to the point where I'm at in, like, my head when I watch Star Wars, and, like, I go through this every time where I'm like, that's ridiculous. and, like, every time, like, I watch every single frame of Star Wars, and, like, can somehow enjoy it in spite of that, but, like, the lowering the shields was so absurd because we are supposed to believe that these dark troopers just hang out there all day, just standing there waiting for these shields to go down. Like, they just stand there like Buckingham Guards or something.
Just,
and then it's like, oh, shields down, time to get to work. Like,
Well, not only that, he's like having R5 put the shields down for him, but then, like, I swear there's a shot where a couple of those dark troopers are like, oh, we gotta, let's go help the other dark troopers right now, and they're like hitting a button and the shield won't open or something. So again, maybe R5 is opening one door and like putting some kind of override lock on all the other doors, but they didn't say that, you know what I mean? And if they had, that would have probably made it less absurd. Because I think the fact that they just stand there all the time waiting for those shields to go down is pretty crazy. But then also the fact that like once they woke up, they couldn't get out of there. You know what I mean? Like, it has to, the only way we can get out is if R5 somewhere else opens up the doors. Like, why? Like, you know?
Yeah, so. I think like maybe he like did like an override on something first and like took control of them.
Yeah, that would make sense.
I guess the way I understood it in my head. But it is like, it is so absurd, and like, I know it was supposed to like build tension, and you know, it was kind of a throwback to the Darth Maul fight in episode one. It was trying to like evoke those feelings, I think, in a way. But like, it is one of those things where it's like, it's so ridiculous that you're like, I'm not feeling tense about this or like immersed in it, because it's like, it's just, it's so ridiculous. But also, but then like that kind of like flows into, as it often does with Star Wars, you're like, this is so dumb. And then it's like, but it looks really cool. So I think that's where it like kind of just like won me over. Like, I don't feel like Din is in any degree of peril right now, and like, I don't care if there's one of these things open or if like they all accidentally get opened, like whatever happens here, like, it doesn't matter, because he's just gonna beat these dudes up. But like, but it was like pretty stylish and cool looking, so you know, it gets a pass for that.
Yeah, I think it's maybe, there was something you said there a minute ago where I think like this is maybe, you know, one of the ways where this episode is just a little not quite there for me, or just like slightly off for me, because it's like, I think you said, oh, it's supposed to build tension or whatever, but it just like, just the way, and I could see where it could or would. And by the way, I think the scene was really cool, and like, I'm down for just like a cool hallway sequence with like the Phantom Menace, you know, shields and dark troopers and Din fighting them and stuff. Like, I'm not mad about the scene. I think it's cool. But it's like, this is one of those things where like, it could have felt tense, but it didn't. And I think it's just, maybe they could have adjusted the way it was put together a little bit, and it probably could have felt tense. You know what I mean? Just like the same thing with the Mandalorian in the beginning, or Din in the beginning of the episode, you know, getting out of like the dark troopers, you know, freeing himself from the dark troopers, like that could have felt like a big deal, or it could have felt like it was really dangerous for him or something. But I just feel like the way they did it was like, it didn't really feel that way. And I'm sure they're probably, with some adjustments, it could have felt a little more tense, you know? So that's kind of a reoccurring thing for me with this episode, is like, there's nothing in it that I don't like, you know? And I think everything in it is pretty cool and fun. And I like the ideas, you know, in the episode. And
yeah.
I like the episode overall, but like, for me, it's like an 8, where I'm like, maybe with a, you know, some editing, or just, I don't know, reworking it a little bit, I feel like it could be a 9 or a 10, you know, but it just doesn't quite get there for me because of some of this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think it's like, thinking about like intent here, I do feel like they were, the intent was to, you know, hit certain story beats to wrap up this season. And I think But, you know, it's Star Wars, so there does need to be, like, a degree of action. And so, like, the action wasn't the priority, and maybe they were trying to just, you know, get through things quickly. So they were trying to condense some of those action sequences to a point so that they could, you know, get to the kind of meat of it, of the episode.
Yeah.
And I don't, like, think those things have to be mutually exclusive. And I think, like, probably a little bit of tweaking could have made better use of the time that they did spend on the action sequences. But I don't feel like that those sequences and, like, tension was the priority with the story here, and I think that stuff just kind of came first.
Yeah, no, that's probably true. And, you know, something we didn't talk about is that the episode's only like 40 minutes long. It's pretty short, really. I guess it's not too short for a Mandalorian episode, because they are generally, you know, more in that, like, some of them are only like barely over 30 minutes long, you know. Mm-hmm. Others are 50 something, whatever. But yeah, sometimes going into the finale, you kind of expect a bigger or a longer episode, and it was like pretty brief.
Yeah, I think it's kind of going back to something from like a month or two ago, with people feeling like the Last of Us finale was rushed.
Mm.
And it's kind of like, I feel sort of like the same way about that, as I do about this, where, like, the, you know, it wasn't really supposed to be like a tense shootout, you know, at the end of that episode. Like, they were trying to get to, you know, get the characters through this situation so that they could hit those story beats at the end and, like, kind of linger more on that stuff. Yeah, I don't know. But I think there is also, like, an expectation with season finales and, you know, there is, like, an expectation it should be, like, a longer episode, or, you know, it should feel like more like a movie, or, you know, kind of whatever there. I mean, I think people just have different expectations going into this.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually think the length was fine. You know, I don't think it should have been any longer than it was. It didn't feel like anything was really rushed, in my opinion, or anything like that. And, you know, really, I think episode 7 and 8 are pretty much one episode. You know, they just cut them in the middle, or cut it and, you know, split it into two chapters. But you're picking up this story, you know, you hit the ground running with this one, right? You basically just pick it up at the end of the last one and boom, 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 go, go, go. So, you know, I guess that saves time right there, right? Because you don't have anything to set up, or there's no exposition needed at the beginning of the episode or anything like that. It's just like, you know, we're just picking up right where we left off.
I wonder if it would have felt different if these episodes had been combined into one, and, you know, it was like this hour and a half, hour and 40 minute thing. And it was just like the series goes until episode 7. And like, if they were combined, if maybe it would have felt different, because, I mean, they were probably shot together, because it's the same director. I do wonder how it would feel, and maybe you could kind of get that feeling watching them, like, back to back, but that's not the initial experience you had, so it's kind of, like, impossible to judge. But I think this is kind of like one of the One of the issues that can happen with weekly episodes of television and not the like approach of like putting everything, you know, dumping everything onto a streaming service at once is like expectations between episodes and predictions and stuff can, you know, mess with people's expectations going into each episode. So like if you were like, if what you had taken away from episode 7 was like, there are spies in episode 8, we are going to find out who the spies are. Like if that was your takeaway and then you go into episode 8, like it's impossible not to be disappointed because that like wasn't there. But yeah, if it was just like episode 7 and 8 together called The Return, like I don't know, could have worked a little better maybe.
Yeah, sure. What did you did so from there there's like a big action sequence and as you alluded to earlier, the cross cut, you know, kind of throughout the, because we're kind of to the climax of the episode here, the last, well, there's a kind of a denouement or, you know, whatever afterwards, but like the big climactic component of the episode were there. And so the cross cut between these three big action sequences. But I think the first part that we see, before cutting to other ones is this jetpack battle with Mandalorians and, Dark Troopers. Jetpacking all over the place, some really great little action moments and cool stuff like that. But just knowing kind of your taste, Ryan, and how you feel about some of the stuff, I believe you've mentioned that you were nervous about seeing action kind of like this, described something very similar to what we just watched. How did this find you? How did you enjoy this specific part of the episode? Mando troopers cruising in jetpacks fighting Dark Troopers cruising in jetpacks.
Mm-hmm. They fly now.
Yeah.
So, man, they showed those first establishing shots of like everyone flying up and, you know, converging into battle. And I was like, oh God, this is not going to be great. But then they did something visually that I think was really smart, which is because like it didn't look great. Those first few shots, I was like, oh, this looks really goofy. And then they did something really smart, I think, is they blur the background when they get in on like the close-up shots. And I think like that just, and you have like this blurred background, you see like these like flashes of like action and you just hear like these like whooshing sounds and stuff. And I think that actually like made it work. Whereas I think if you had like pulled out to like a medium shot and just had, you know, everyone like fully in frame like doing it, it would have looked so goofy. But like really zooming in, blurring the background, I think like was like the best choice for that. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think this was certainly not an action sequence I needed. And I think if it had been in isolation, I don't think I would have liked it at all. But I think, you know, the saving graces are like, again, like the techniques they used, for the sequence, but also the fact that it was part of something bigger. Like this was just one component of like essentially a three-pronged battle. And I guess like, you know, you have Mandalorians and they have jetpacks, and this was probably something that, you know, John Favreau really, I could see him like just really wanting to see like, okay, we got a bunch of Mandalorians and they're flying around and like fighting and like, sure, like whatever.
Yeah, I liked it a lot too. And it's not something that, you know, I necessarily would be, I don't know, super looking forward to, I guess you'd say. I think the points you made are exactly why it works, you know. But I think just to kind of state it simply, they focus on individual components of it. You know, they focus on, you know, one or two dark troopers taking on one or maybe two, you know, Mandalorian troopers instead of lots of wide zoomed out shots of, you know, tons and tons of troopers battling each other. I mean, there's establishing kind of shots like at the beginning of the battle, and, you know, once in a while they'll cut back to the larger view of the overall battle going on, but mostly it's more kind of one-on-one sort of action. And yeah, I mean, the shallow focus probably helps, but you know, I think this could have been, and I know many people love it, I think you love it, Ryan, but this could have been the Geonosis battle, you know, sequence with a million Jedi in the middle, a million you know, troopers or whatever, like just not and a million droids and Geonosians, like it's just too much going on, and I don't know, that just is not really my favorite thing. And I think the way this was handled, it kept it personal, it kept it focused on individual moments, and it just worked. So, you know, in an episode where maybe there's a few things where I'm like, I'm not sure about the direction, or I'm not sure about the sort of editorial choices, I think this is a big victory in terms of, of doing this really well and making it work.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I think the Geonosis battle is like a good example, because you think of like, what are the parts of that battle that like look ridiculous and not great? And then like, what are the parts that are like amazing? Like you have like, you know, that, like close up on like Kit Fisto and like the big smile, and like there's like all these little things that like are like what's good about that scene. And I think like, yeah, like this scene really kind of like focused on that like zoomed in approach, which was the right approach for this, for sure.
Yeah, so then obviously it cuts to Moff Gideon and Din Djarin and that whole confrontation. Well, actually, before that, I didn't make a note in my notes, but before that, Din and Grogu walk through the room full of Gideon clones in the vats, you know?
Yeah.
I was expecting to see Snoke's in vats, but it was Gideon clones in vats. And that was pretty cool. It's kind of an exciting reveal, cool reveal. But then Din, cold-hearted, just is like, we just need to break all these vats open and just let these clones go, you know what I mean? So like, if Omega had seen that, I don't know what she would have thought. Like, that was pretty cruel, that was pretty cold-hearted. But then again, Gideon clones, that would be dangerous, man, you know. Although this season is about how people can change, so maybe those Gideon clones should have been left alive and allowed to have an opportunity to change. I don't know. But Din said, oh, hell no, and just,
yeah,
he let them go, you know. So then when Gideon shows up, he is pissed, as one would expect, and says something to the effect of, my clones were going to be perfect, the best parts of me, but with the ability to wield the Force, you know. Like, he was making some super Gideons in those tubes, and they were taken out. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that at all, or any reactions to Gideon's cloning himself, a lot of himself?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, the big takeaway here is kind of, like, what we, you know, what was either hinted at or explicitly stated in season one and probably two, that, you know, the reason Gideon wanted Grogu was to, like, get blood samples or tissue samples or whatever to inject the Force into clones. So I guess, would it be like getting midichlorians?
I think,
like,
he needs to up the M count on these guys, probably.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
So, but then having it, like, very explicitly told here, I think there's a lot of implications for that, like, specifically with, like, the sequel trilogy. And, I mean, it's, you know, did we need this explanation in Star Wars? You know, did we need this for, you know, the sequel trilogy story? I mean, who knows? You know, but I think there's implications for sure.
Yeah. I mean, this specifically, I don't think is super tied to the sequel trilogy, you know?
You don't think?
I mean, obviously it's all leading up to Palpatine's clones and all that, but, and Snoke even. But Gideon himself, like the fact that Gideon wanted to clone himself and all that, I think that's more, you know, to me, that's, we're already dealing with all this cloning stuff. Like cloning is a big part of like this era. And, you know, I think more and more coming out of Celebration, Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau have been talking about The Mandalorian as, and the other shows that they're working on, as them kind of exploring this whole sort of timeline or this section of the timeline of Star Wars. And part of it is really setting up this conflict between the New Republic and the Mandalorians and Ahsoka and whoever, and this emerging, you know, new empire, First Order, etc. And so, like, yes, it is explaining, it is putting pieces into place for the sequel trilogy, and because like cloning ends up being a big part of the sequel trilogy, you know, at least in how the First Order, you know, what they were trying to do and how they came to be and all that kind of stuff. It is building that out. But yeah, I guess it would be either way. If you had this Gideon stuff, it would be. If you didn't have this Gideon stuff with the clones, it would be. You know what I mean? And so I think like having this moment, especially in what I assume is the last episode in which we will see Moff Gideon, to me, it felt like closing his story more than like, oh, well, we got to put this, we got to put these Gideon clones in because of the sequels on the horizon, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not just that, though, because it's also how this is going to tie in with the heir to the empire stuff, too, because, and then, you know, like, that's intrinsically linked to, like, Dark Empire, and, like, there's a whole lot of cloning happening in those stories.
But last week we learned that Brendel Hux is more of the cloning guy than Gideon is, you know, or like that he's, I think there's a
few fans of cloning, in this, you know, this new, this Empire sequel.
True. That's
that
true.
We have going on here. So like, I think it's, you know, it just is, you know, I think, It's so funny to me that like the, you know, the EU, the heir to the empire, Dark Empire stuff, like they, you know, came to the conclusion, like what happens after Return of the Jedi? Cloning. That's what happens. And then, you know, we get Disney coming in and being like, okay, all that stuff's gone. And people being like, okay, good, because that cloning stuff was ridiculous. And, you know, some people. And then others were like, man, you know, that was my Star Wars. Like, I love that cloning and Luke and, you know, everything. And then, like, that it's, like, eventually, just after enough time, like, this era of Star Wars also is, like, yeah, it's cloning. Like, I think that's just the natural conclusion you just have to land on. And I'm sure, like, you know, 20, 30 years from now, like, the original trilogy is going to get, like, remade, and, you know, all this is going to happen. And then, like, you know, 20 years after that, like, they're going to have, like, okay, this is the follow-up to our new original trilogy, and somehow there's going to be, like, man, it's got to be cloning, huh? Like, I don't know. It's just the natural conclusion of, you know, the post-original trilogy era. And, you know, again, everything kind of just goes back to Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones. That movie is the key to all of this.
Yeah, I guess everything goes back to Attack of the Clones, as you say, even though Attack of the Clones was like a decade after Heir to the Empire and the cloning stuff that came before. But yes. yeah. All right. So I also want to correct myself, because I think I did mess up the way I was talking about the Gideon, or not the Gideon, but the Praetorian Guard thing and Grogu saving Din, because Grogu does this kind of again. In fact, I think earlier he doesn't distract and lead the Dark Troopers away. I think he just helps defeat the Dark Troopers or something. I'm not remembering because I didn't write that down. But I know now, at this point, the Praetorians, I think this is when the Praetorians show up, and they are messing up Din. They are really messing Din up, and that's when Grogu distracts the Praetorians into another room, and then they mess up IG-12, and then Grogu has to hop out of him and, like, jump along that ceiling thing, kind of, you know, not dissimilar to Attack of the Clones, as you say, you know, as you just brought up.
Yeah.
So that's when Grogu is really being heroic and saving Din from the Praetorian Guard specifically. And then, you know, what did you think of Gideon as like a melee combatant, you know what I mean, as a hand-to-hand fighter, as a formidable action hero himself? What did you think of that stuff?
I don't know, like maybe this is like ageist or something, but the vibes were similar to like Palpatine in Revenge of the Sith, you know, and him fighting, and even like Dooku to a degree, where it's like really, like you're just this like total hardcore like melee fighter. I don't quite buy it. It doesn't feel like a major threat, but honestly, like going back through Star Wars, like it's pretty rare that you get, because it is like it's always like young versus old.
Dooku, Palpatine, Darth Vader.
Yeah. Darth Vader in the OT, and like, yeah, you're like, it that's just, you know, the way it is. Like, you rarely get like two like evenly matched, you know, fighters on both sides. I mean, honestly, like the closest we've really gotten in like the mainline stories is like Rey and Ben fighting on the Death Star ruins. Like,
Yeah, I think the sound design went a long way here though too. The sound design, like you heard a lot of like gears and mechanical elements and stuff every time Gideon was moving. So I feel like that was implying or indicating that suit he was wearing is pretty beefed up and has a lot of potential. Not to say that he's, you know, not formidable himself, but I think like that suit was doing a lot of heavy lifting for him, as it does for all the Mandalorians too. You know what I mean? He has that Beskar armor in his suit. Like part of why, I mean, because they can just walk right into blaster bolts and stuff. You know what I mean? A lot of times, and it's because they have that Beskar armor. So, you know, that does make it more believable, I think. But so Dan and Gideon battle for a while there, and Grogu, you know, kind of distracts and tries to survive the onslaught of Praetorian guards. And then Bo-Katan flies in and she's like, I've got this, go save your kid, you know, which it's a good moment. It's nice, you know, kind of hero pop or whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was cool. And then Din and Grogu kind of together take out those Praetorian guards, which was nice too, because Din does all the like actual fighting and stuff, but there were multiple shots and edits where it was like it was clear that the Praetorian was just about to get their weapon and use it to defeat Din, but then Grogu uses the Force to pull the weapon away or push the Praetorian back or whatever. So it was definitely a team effort there, and as a result, Din tells Grogu at the end, "You did good, kid." So I thought that was nice, right? It's a good father-son battle there. Together, team up.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, like, something we do see here is Grogu's stamina increase so much from, like, from Force use. Because, like, I mean, we, you know, go back to seasons 1 and 2. Like, he does a Force push and then, like, falls asleep. Kind of thing. And like here he is using that Force.
Well, it's just a sneak peek at what he's going to do later as far as using the Force goes.
And then I guess we might as well talk about the Big Bang.
Yeah. Well, we're almost there. We're almost to the Big Bang. There?
Okay.
Yeah, we are. Because the next thing that happens is that Gideon grabs the Darksaber and crushes it. And I think some people are upset about this. I think some people are kind of pissed about this. Where do you fall on that, Ryan? Are you okay with the creator's decision to, you know, allow Gideon to crush that Darksaber? Where do you land? Because I think some people, like I said, are kind of precious about the Darksaber. And I'm not saying that to like pass a judgment necessarily, but I think some people are just like, you can't. They shouldn't do that. That's not cool that they broke the Darksaber.
I'm okay with it. I think the Darksaber is like cool looking. It's like, you know, like this badass black metal like lightsaber. Like cool. Awesome. To me, like what it like how it matters in the story is like that it was something that someone needed to lead Mandalore, like to lead the Mandalorians to retake Mandalore. Bo-Katan has done that. Like she has taken like the role of leader. She's been accepted into that role. She's, you know, led the Mandalorians to take back Mandalore. Like, I don't think she, like, needs this, like, symbolic sword anymore.
Well, I think I agree, and I think even maybe more importantly than that, part of what this season was about is some of those Mandalorians realizing or, you know, kind of progressing or whatever to a place where they're like, maybe we can set some of the dogma aside, or maybe we don't have to live and die by some of this dogma or whatever, right? So, yeah, Bo is their leader, but also they have chosen not to be so dogmatic and so strict about all the rules all the time. So I think in that sense, it's fine. Fans love the Darksaber, so, hey, it's not cool that you crushed it, I guess. But, you know, I love Luke Skywalker's and Anakin Skywalker's lightsaber, and it got crushed in The Last Jedi. And, you know, I think, number one, that was like a challenging thing. The movie's a challenging movie, and that's like a challenging one of many challenging moments in it. And I think it's cool to challenge the audience like that, number one. Yep. And number two, guess what? It's Star Wars. You can fix the Darksaber. You know what I mean? They fixed the hero lightsaber. You can fix it. You know what I mean? Whatever. So, plus they'll tell many, many hours of television and movies and everything else about stuff with the Darksaber from before this moment. So you'll see it on screen again too. So I think it's okay. You know, I think it, in fact, I think it was a bold choice, and I think it was a good choice.
Yeah.
Cause it has some symbolic meaning, and also it's like a shock and challenge to the audience. So I think it's great on all those levels.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, don't worry. It will come back as like a double bladed Darksaber at some point with like the General Grievous 2.0, whatever. Like, someone is going to do something ridiculous with it, whether it be on TV or, like, in comics or a book or something. So, but I think, like, the purpose it serves in this story has essentially been exhausted. So, and I think, like, yeah, I think it is kind of, I think they could have maybe addressed it a little bit more than it, like, just being, like, broken. I mean, even just, like, a passing line of dialogue or something, just to be, like, you know, the characters acknowledging that, no, we don't need this anymore. But, I mean, as an audience member, I'm like, no, they don't need that anymore. For this story and for Bo-Katan's story. So,
right.
Yeah. But I maybe they could have, because it does kind of feel weird with, like, the absurd amount of, like, expository dialogue where, like, characters are, like, literally stating, like, the themes oftentimes of this show. It's weird that, like, this is a time they used restraint and was like, you know, it's up to the viewer. Like, nothing has been up to the viewer. Like, you've told us everything so far. So yeah, it is an interesting choice.
And, well, speaking of you know, very straightforward lines, after that moment, Moff Gideon tells Bo-Katan, Mandalorians are weak once they lose their trinkets. And then there's a sweet ass shot of Bo-Katan saying, Mandalorians are stronger together. And then at that point, like, I guess maybe the Mandalorians fly in, but if not, like, the ship crashes, right, from Axe Wolves. And this is just another, I mean, like, there's so many times where if you stop and think of it, of course, like, this stuff doesn't make any sense, and Star Wars is Star Wars and all that, and I'm totally fine with that. But this is definitely one of those, like, gotta really set aside my logic and you know, kind of really stretch that that disbelief or whatever, or the suspension of disbelief, because that ship crashes into the base, and it's like, all right, cool. Well, there's gonna be a fireball for about 30 seconds, and as long as we don't, like, get burned up by that, it's everything's cool from there, you know? And I'm like, that thing is massive. It is massive. It's like multiple city blocks, like, crashing down on this base. Like, it just seemed like such a silly, and it's fine that it's silly. You know, this show is often silly, but it seemed like such a silly thing that it's like, all right, guys, like, we should probably go because there's this giant ship that's about to crash into this base, which would utterly destroy it. And people are still like, yeah, I know, but I'm, like, exchanging punches with dark troopers right now. Or, like, you know, they're all just standing there talking to each other. You can see the ship about to, like, crash into this thing, and nobody's acting like, we should probably get the hell out of here, you know? So it was pretty wild. And then, as we had alluded to, brought up earlier, like, there's this giant fireball explosion. It kills Gideon, who has a jetpack on, but didn't seem to think he needed to fly out of there at all. So it kills Gideon. And then Grogu, of course, creates the Kanan Jarrus-esque barrier in the Force that holds the flames back. And it's this, I was going to say this great shot, but I don't know if it's that great of a shot, but it's this great shot of mom, dad, and baby is holding that fire back, you know? So I think in concept, it's great. Anyways, but,
I've only watched the episode once, like, when it first aired. So I can't, like, I'm trying to remember this specifically, but the part that I think was ridiculous to me is I don't remember if it's Din or Bo, but someone puts up their, like, giant, like, Mandalorian trash can lid. Like,
yeah, that's Bo-Katan, I think. Yeah.
That, like, is, like, the size of, like, a basketball, and like, holds that up in front of everyone, and it's like, well, don't worry, I have a plan. Oh, okay, well, Grogu, I mean, that's cool that you did.
Look,
that.
I'm guilty of nitpicking this episode to death, I have to say, you know, so I feel bad about that, but I keep doing it. But in that case, I'm going to stick up for Bo-Katan and the show, because I just think, like, in that moment, like, you would cover, like, that's instinctual, you know, you cover your face or whatever, you know, you would do that. But it wouldn't really work, but you would do it. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. But it's like what you were saying earlier, like, why wouldn't you, like, get out of there? When, like, you would think, like, those characters would have the wherewithal to, like, you know, they scoop up Grogu and they like jetpack like out of there as that ship's like coming down, and like, and Moff Gideon would have like the Disney villain's death like done in by his own hubris, being like, ah, I got this, like, kind of thing. But you know what it,
yeah,
what
yeah because it, like oh man, like even like I can think of all these Star Wars climactic Star Wars scenes where stuff like this happens, but the heroes do like, you know, the Millennium Lando flying the Millennium Falcon, it does emerge out of the second Death Star just as it's exploding, right? But he's trying to get out of there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In The Last Jedi, like, yes, like, you know, they almost die when Snoke's ship is you know, all destroyed and whatever else, but they're all rushing to get onto a shuttle to get off of the ship, you know what I mean? Nobody's just standing around being like, I don't know, whatever, you know? So, I mean, granted, they're on the surface of a planet. It's a little bit of a different experience, but it's another, I'm sorry to say, but it's another example of like, this should have felt like you were inches away from death. And instead it just felt like Super Baby just did the Super Baby thing. And it was really not that big of a deal. And you know what I mean? Like, it just did not ever feel, because on paper, that is the most wild concept. Like a capital ship is going to crash into the base and we're on it. You would look up into the sky and be like, holy, we have to get out of here. And nobody in that scene seems to think that there's any reason to like leave. You know what I mean? It's pretty nuts. I think it's pretty nuts.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's again, like, logic being kind of like pushed aside in for like character moments.
Yeah.
I mean, for better or worse, because like you do get the scene of Grogu, you know, making the anti-fire bubble for his fam, and then like that being over, and then him being like, cool, what's next? Like that it does show like, and we've already seen like him just like using the force. Like he's getting like his power and stamina has just increased so much. You know, I mean, probably because of the training from Luke. Like, I mean, that's, I guess, or just, I mean, he hasn't like aged that much comparatively for, you know, his race. So, it's gotta be that Luke training.
Yeah.
But I think that was the purpose of that. And, all logic was kind of like brushed aside for better or worse.
Yeah. And it's fine. You know, like it's a cool Star Wars moment. It's a really fun, like kind of action sequence. And, you know, I don't want to like, we're talking analytically and critically about this episode, and so, you know, these things are on my mind, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's not like I finished the episode and I was like, well, that sucked. Like, oh god, Star Wars sucks when it's not believable. Like, I don't need it to be. It's fine, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, the other side of that coin is I feel like if you zoom out a little bit and just look at this scene as a whole, like what it's trying to do and what it's trying to accomplish, I think, you know, there's a way you could accomplish the same things and have basically the same sequence of events, but have it feel to the audience more believable and more tense. Or you could have the same sequence with the same series of events and the same outcomes and have it feel like there was never really any danger or tension at all. And I wouldn't go that far to say, oh my God, it felt like there was nothing. But I think it could have been made in a way that you felt that stuff more, and they didn't really make it that way. You know what I mean? And again, maybe that's a choice. Maybe they were just, this episode does have a very uplifting kind of conclusion and a very positive overall kind of thing. So maybe this is intentional. Maybe they just wanted it to be more of like a really upbeat good guys win kind of conclusion to the season. And it is that, you know what I mean? So that's cool. Mm-hmm. But you know, yeah, I just, there were a few moments where I was like, you know, I think this could have been done a little differently. And it doesn't mean you have to rewrite the scene or have, like, you could, Grogu could still have the moment where he has the, you know, saves him from the fireball and everything. But if at least they felt like before that, like they were, man, this is bad. Or like after that, they were like,
urgency.
Or afterwards, like, okay, Grogu just saved us. Like, we better get the hell out of here, you know? But like, I just never really got that feeling from the scene ever. And it's kind of weird, you know?
Yeah. No, I think that is totally fair. Because like I mean throughout this whole episode, like, this has been like a reoccurring thing we've been talking about. Like, I did not feel really any tension or peril throughout this episode. And I think like when Star Wars does, like, it's not that Star Wars isn't capable of that. Like, it's not that these stories are so ridiculous that, like, you can't have that tension, because, like, you know, we see it. There's been moments in episodes of The Mandalorian that have felt extremely tense. And then, you know, stuff like Andor, obviously, which is just, like, way, way more grounded, where you're feeling that tension constantly. I mean, I do think it was just like it was a choice, and you know, that's what they went with. They decided to focus on some aspects, and I think, like, overall, I think that was, you know, it's not that you can't have one without the other, but like, it's pretty apparent to me, like, what the focus was for, like, each of these kind of scenes. And you know, it almost just feels like they were like, just kind of like, you know, they needed to hit these like action beats, and then, but like, it wasn't where the heart was of this episode and this season, I guess. So
I mean, you know, I obviously, it's okay to critique and to have problems with stuff, but like, I hope, you know, it's clear that, like, I still had a lot of fun with this episode. I still enjoyed it a lot. I still think it was good. I still liked it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's not, I'm not like, oh, it sucked and throw it out and it was garbage, whatever. I thought it was great, but you know, to me personally, I feel like some adjustments, maybe it could have been next level great, you know, but I don't know. It seems like it was next level great for a lot of people. So that's cool too. And I guess there's a lot of people that hated it. I don't know, or hated the season or whatever. So
yeah,
that's true too. But
I think I see like every single like thing that like didn't work for you. Like I see that. And like, yeah. I mean, most of that stuff didn't really work for me either, but like, just looking at it like as a whole, and I think like the story told, I think as a whole, like, really worked for me.
Yeah.
So, because there's going to be like another moment that we're about to get to that I thought was trash, and but like, it still didn't ruin the episode for me, and I still like felt like immensely satisfied at the end of this episode.
All right, well, let's talk about the end then. Let's talk at the end. There's a little coda, or kind of like, you know, wrap up a little section here after all the climactic stuff, which is, you know, I think it needed, and that's good. But it definitely bounces around to a few different things in just a few minutes here at the end, and it opens with the armorer completing some kind of ceremony with Paz. What's his name? Ragnar, you know, I think, which is Paz's, the late, poor one out, late great Paz Vizsla's son. And they're doing some kind of ceremony. I personally found this confounding and confusing. Mm-hmm. Not a problem. Like, I don't care, but I'm like, this guy just had his ceremony with the water and stuff. Is it because the monster popped up and they didn't get to finish it? Is it something to do with the fact that Paz died? But like, it just seemed like she was saying, all right, you're not a foundling anymore. You're going to be whatever the next step is. And I'm like, I saw that on the beach, didn't I? Like, what is this?
This scene, I don't know.
Okay. This is what you thought was trash? This scene is what you thought was trash?
Well, I think it's like the next part in particular. But that this like whole thing, I was like, why is this happening? Like, why are you like spelling this stuff out in like this way? Mm-hmm. I'm pretty ambivalent to this part with Ragnar here, but I think like the whole purpose of that was to set up like the next part and like, okay, now it's Grogu's turn, because like they needed to like establish that apparently Mandalorians have this this confirmation proceedings that happen, and now like everything's elevated because they're in the Great Lakes of Mandalore. Mm-hmm. So now it's like super official now.
The purifying waters of Lake Minnetonka. It could be. Because then Din says to the armor, like, okay, well, Grogu, it's time for Grogu to do this same thing, right? Add Grogu to the song. And the armor is like, he can't speak yet. If he can't speak, he's too young. And Din's like, well, what if a parent could speak for him? And then the armor is like, oh, like Grogu, like you could be Grogu's dad? I'm like, wait, what are you talking about? He's been Grogu's dad forever. What is this?
Well, first, she's like, well, no, his parents are too far away.
Yeah.
We don't know where his parents are.
And no, that's Din Djarin is his dad. What are you talking about?
Yep. So this part I thought sucked.
Okay. See, I didn't think it sucked, but I thought it was sort of like an awkward setup to get there. First, when I was first watching it, I was like, I'm almost mad because, like, what are you talking about? Din's going to adopt Grogu. He adopted Grogu forever ago. Like, that's the whole thing. But then as I thought more about it, I was like, well, but, it is a sweet moment. It's a nice thing for Din to say in front of everybody, like, I want to adopt him. And then when she's like, he's Din Grogu. First off, I laughed and smiled and I was like, this is fun. I like that. I like Din Grogu. It makes no damn sense. It's really, I shouldn't say it makes no damn sense. It's fine. I mean, it's just a different like arrangement or order of nouns, I guess, or whatever that I would have expected. Mm-hmm. But it's funny, and I think it sounds good. Din Grogu, you know what I mean? Din Djarin and Din Grogu, let's go. You know what I mean? I like that. So I think it's fun. And I think it's sweet that Din, in front of everybody is like, I will adopt him. I will adopt Grogu. But I also am like, bro, like you've been his dad for going on 3 seasons now. Like, I don't know why now it's like a thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, to me this scene was like poetry. It rhymes with one of my probably my least favorite scene in Solo, where he's talking to the Imperial dude and he's like, so what's your family name? He's like, I don't have one. Oh, Solo. Like, and you're like, why are you doing this? Why are you telling us this? Like, who needed this?
To me, it calls to mind the end of The Rise of Skywalker, which isn't a bad thing to me, but like with the Rey Skywalker reveal, because I like the Rey Skywalker reveal, I love it. But I also feel like as an audience, we weren't watching The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi, and the Rise of Skywalker, all of them feeling like it is very, very obvious that Rey has been adopted by Luke and Leia and that they know it and she knows it. You know what I mean? Because if it had felt extremely obvious all along, and then at the end of the movie, she's like Rey Skywalker, and then, the ghosts of Luke and Leia are like smiling at her or whatever, I'd be like, yeah, we know that. We knew that. You know what I mean? So I think like that's what this felt like to me. It felt like a confirmation of something that everybody already knew anyway, and is almost like, again, I think after further assessment, I don't feel this way, but at least initially I was like, it's almost a slap in the face to Grogu, because it's like, what do you mean you're just now finally admitting that you're my dad? Like, you've straight up been my dad forever. You know what I mean? So that's how I felt about it. It just, overall, like, is it a nice thing that Din wants to formally adopt him as a Mandalorian, all that stuff. Yeah, but like, dude, every conversation he's had with anybody ever for like two seasons at least, he talks about Grogu like he's his son. Everybody calls him your kid. You know what I mean? Like, it's constant. So to be like, he's like, what if I were to be Grogu's dad? What? Yeah. Like, yeah, what if you have been forever, dude? You know? I don't know.
Yeah, that was not one of the, like, it wasn't a problem that needed to be solved.
No,
like,
no.
It wasn't one of, like, the, like, themes of, you know, this season. Like, how can Din formally adopt Grogu? Like,
yeah.
It is like this issue that's created, this problem created in 5 minutes in like this like wholly unnecessary scene, and then like to just like the putting, like feeling the need to put a like words to it, like fit, like we are, like you were saying, I'm just being redundant, but like you were saying, like we've known Din is Grogu's dad, like, you know, for 2.5 seasons of this show, and we know that. We know Han Solo is a roguish, like, guy who does things his own way. And, like, we don't need to, like, put these, like, words on it. And I think, like, I'm kind of, like, staying out of, like, the Rey Skywalker thing, because I think there's, like, other things happening with that, so that it's not, like, a one-to-one comparison. But, like, this need to, like, put, like, to name something that, like, doesn't need to be named. It's like, you can't even get, like, people to call him Grogu, like, in the world. Like, are people now going to be like, Din Baby Yoda? like,
well,
I mean,
I'm going to call him Din Grogu, and I'm looking forward to calling him Din Grogu. I've been calling everybody Din. I like my Elliot, my son, Din Elliot. I keep calling him that now, you know, because I think it's fun. Wow. Like, you know,
sometimes in your household right now.
Yeah, yeah. I don't really have a name for my car or anything, but if I did, I would add a Din in front of it, you know, as I talk to it. Like, I like it. We have a vacuum cleaner, like a little robot vacuum cleaner, you know. I might start calling him Din something. I don't know. But anyway, long story short, I like all that part of it. But like, just... And I hate to be this guy. Like, I do not want to be this guy who's like, why did they just do this? Because I could have done it better. Yeah. Like, I do not think in any way I could have done it better. I don't think I can make the show. These people are wildly talented. I'm, you know, I'm not trying to act like they're not. But I'm like, number one, I think there's a way that this, all the stuff that happened leading up to that moment in this episode could have been like Grogu proving himself as ready to be an apprentice. He saved Din twice. He helped. They worked together and fought together. Why isn't that the conversation at the end of the episode? Armorer, Grogu fought valiantly beside me. I could not have survived without his help. He is a Mandalorian apprentice. He has earned it. You know what I mean? That would make so much logic. It would have felt right at the end of this episode. Or if they don't want to go this way, that way, if they want to go this way where the armor is like, well, his parents aren't here, why doesn't Din look her in the face and just be like, I am Grogu's dad? It would have been declarative. It would have been acknowledging everybody knows it. I'm his dad. But instead he's like, what if I adopt him? What if we go play these games? You know what I mean? And it did not have, I think I got goosebumps right now. Man, that's pretty good. I wrote some dialogue and gave myself goosebumps on a podcast right now. But like, I think there's a way that performance and that dialogue could have been really emotional and powerful if it would have been like, no, I am his dad. What are you talking about? But that's not at all the angle it took. So just little things like that, I just really feel like, man, there's some missed opportunities in this episode, which is weird. Still really good, but definitely some missed opportunities.
Yeah, and you know, thinking back to when Din handed over the Darksaber, and he was like, Yeah, Bo-Katan used this to save me. Like, she should just have it. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. And then it's like, it's so weird that he's like, all right, so what is the legal path to this kid being hanging out with me?
Like, yeah. Now to not be an asshole for a second and to kind of be a little more generous to the writers or whatever, I think, you know, you could argue that this is another moment where it's like the armor is to a degree being progressive or setting aside, like, okay, well, yeah, I guess, you know what, he's not supposed to be an apprentice yet, but we'll make it work. We will do that. We'll bend the mm-hmm. rules or whatever. So, like, okay, you know, if that was the mentality of the writing of, you know, we want to continue to kind of build out this theme of, you know, kind of setting aside dogma or finding a way to work within that dogma that works for everybody instead of holding people back and restricting them, which is what I think, you know, the Mandalorians learned to do in this season in a positive way. And that's something we had been talking about, or I'd been talking about in previous episodes, mm-hmm. is like, ultimately, what is it going to say about these people? What is it going to say about their culture? What is it going to say about their rule set? And I think it's a very optimistic, kind of positive, sort of uplifting kind of final answer about all that, at least mm-hmm. as far as this yeah. season goes. You know, everybody kind of did their best that they could do for each other. They came together. Nobody is forcing anybody else to kind of live a life they don't want to live because of some dogma or anything. I don't think that was true before, but I think as season three progressed, that's where all of these Mandalorians have come to. So then in the next scene, when they're at that forge and everybody's shouting for Mandalore, it's an uplifting thing because I don't think anybody's yeah. being held there against their will. I don't think anybody's, some people have their helmets on, some people have their helmets off. Like, they've all come together and it's a positive thing.
Yeah. It's just, and I think, like, that's what I love about this finale. Like, it, mm-hmm. it did the thing it set out to do. It had, like, a very clear mission statement in, you know, both terms of plot and theme. And it, like, it did that. And it just, it sucks that, like, the waters just got a little bit muddied, like, for this moment where there's, like, this doesn't quite make sense.
Yeah.
Like okay, yeah. we're throwing out, like, this dogma, that dogma, but not that one. Like,
yeah. Well, but they, you know. She wasn't a hard ass about it, though, because she did say, okay, fine, yeah, you know. It didn't take a lot of convincing, I guess,
yeah, to get her. Yeah, but it's like, it was so weird, though, because she's like, absolutely not. Like, no. It cannot be done. It is impossible. And then, like, 30 seconds later, she's like, okay, good point.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's like, I don't know. Like, yeah, yeah, there has, again, like, I am not in this writer's room. I never would be. Like, I am, but, like, there has to be, like, a more elegant way to communicate that. Because, like, the end message communicated was good. Mm-hmm. And, like, and what it, like, leads to is good. But, like, why did you say it in, like, such a weird way? Like,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and then, okay, so then from there, the armor is like, all right, well, if he's your apprentice, you've got to take Grogu out on his own journey, just as your mentor did for you. He's got to go out and live his own life and have his own journey and all that, which as a concept, I think is cool, you know?
Yeah.
And I also think it's very much like saying to the audience, all right, next season is going to be kind of more of a, probably less of a Mando ensemble season and more of a, you know, I don't know if Din and Grogu or maybe other characters too, but I think this felt so final with the Mandalorians. And I saw a lot of people say, like, this felt like a, you said this, Ryan, it felt like it could have been a series finale. Mm-hmm. And I think in some ways it could have been, but then in other ways it was like the armor saying this, like, okay, next season of this television show, you guys got to go out and have your own journey. You know, that didn't feel very final to me, but the Mandalorians all being there at the Forge saying for Mandalore, as they've all become the best kind of version of themselves as a group and as individuals, that felt like we really did tell a complete story with these different factions of Mandalorians. And that story, I don't personally really want a lot of the Mandalorians in season 4 of The Mandalorian. At least I don't think I do, because it really does feel like they did a pretty complete beginning to end. These people were all separated. They've come back together. They've made their choices. They are a united force. I think they're a good thing to have in the toolbox for like next time there's this big battle and they need reinforcements or, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. But I don't think there's much left to explore in the next season as far as like, where do we go next with all of these characters and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I'm sure there's things I could do, but it feels like they kind of close that chapter to me.
Yeah. I feel like it could go either way. Because I feel like you could have like the approach that they've taken to like Navarro, where like, you know, eventually Din and Grogu go back to Mandalore and it's like, hey, this is like a functioning society now. Like, look at, you know, how things are here. But like, I mean, I think, you know, maybe there is like some conflict in like how, you know, what is the future of Mandalore? Like, we know it is like a place that like some Imperials want, that it is like a hot spot in that way. Like, in I still think there could be or couldn't be more of Bo-Katan's story to tell. And then I don't know.
Well, I think these characters will show up again in The Mandalorian season 4. I think they'll be involved. But, you know, there was like, I think there's some quote from Rick Famuyiwa from Star Wars Celebration where, you know, he said, oh, well, now the show is, it's not about Din as the Mandalorian anymore. It's about all the Mandalorians and all that stuff. And I think, you know, we have talked about it on this show too. Like, is it going to become a show that's more about like, what is a Mandalorian? Like, what is that? I think this season is about what is a Mandalorian and who are the Mandalorians and what do they need to do? And, you know, all that stuff. But, and they went from being supporting players to main eventers. You know what I mean? They were like Bo-Katan, especially obviously, but just the Mandalorian culture was like a main character in this season. And I think it should go back to being a supporting character, in the next season, where I think it will. I think the armor's lines indicate that it will. And then I also think just the finality of them, it's so positive, this conclusion. It's so like, we accomplished what we needed to accomplish.
Yeah.
And as a result, I think, you know, there's of course interesting, you know, like their stories aren't over, their lives aren't over. And, but even like the ship crashing into the base on Mandalore, that almost to me like closes the book on the whole, the empire, like Gideon did take Mandalore. He destroyed it. And then he built his base there. And then they used a former Imperial ship to destroy that base. And like, they've taken it back. Yep. So like, if in the next season, it's like, well, now the Empire's showing up and they want to take Mandalore again. And to me, it's like, I really feel like they have been pretty, like they gave them so much time and so much space and so much focus in this season. But I think by the end of it, it really feels like they've said, yeah, like a big chunk of this season was about them, but also now we've told that story. So I just, it doesn't feel like they will be a big focus again in the next season, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we've learned from this season is, like, this show is unpredictable. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, even in, like, season 2, like, I don't think we could have predicted everything, you know, in season 2. Like, season 2, like, oh, this is about Boba Fett and Luke Skywalker now?
Yeah.
Like, what? And so, and Ahsoka, like, I mean, I don't know. My one prediction is still that, the Din and Grogu's adventures and missions that were implied are probably going to occur to some degree in, another season of Mandalorian, but I think there's going to be a video game. Because this show is a video game, and when they're like explicitly like, hey, you should go run some side quests, like it feels like the most logical thing in the world to have, you know, the Din and Grogu video game, like, yeah, and telling some of those stories that, you know, I mean, like, they could go back to, like, Bounty of the Week, you know, for the New Republic type story, but, like, that feels kind of like a step back for, you know, the storytelling here. And, like, yeah, you can still, like, tell, you know, interesting stories and, like, you know, have those, you know, big parental themes and, like, you know, Grogu growing up type stuff. Like, that can still, like, you know, that's still going to be powerful stuff. But, like, I don't know. It does feel like a bit of a step back after, like, the escalation of, you know, these two, like, season two and season three, and how, like, the story has, like, gotten so much bigger. I think what the next season is about is going to be informed by what we see in Ahsoka and Skeleton Crew.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think those shows are going to introduce things that we are and aren't expecting. That's like, oh, okay, so that's where the Din's story will kind of come in.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't think it's going to be like Carson Teva, like, you know, episode one of season four of Mandalorian is going to open up with Carson Teva being like, hey, I need you to go investigate this wreck on whatever planet. Like, and then they, like, take care of that in the first episode. And then it's like, hey, there's this thing in this cave. Like, can you go check that out for episode two? Like, and I don't think it will be that.
Yeah. So okay. Yes. So final things here. I agree. Although I also don't think they put this scene of Din going to talk to Carson Teva about taking on missions for the New Republic to not have him do that in the next season of The Mandalorian either.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen in a video game.
Well, I think it's going to happen in the next season also. Like, I don't know. I mean, I like your video game idea and I want to play that video game, and they very well could do that. But regardless, like, if they do, it's still going to be the percentage of the audience that watches the show that would actually play that video game on whatever next generation video game console. Like, it's a very, and I think this season has lost some of the mainstream appeal to Mandalorian, the show, mm-hmm. to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to throw that out there. But still, I think there's a lot of people that watch this show that would never think about picking up a Mandalorian video game. So, I mean, yeah, you could put a little tiny moment like this one with Carson Teva in there to seed a video game and tease that. And, it, you know, it's not like the general audience is going to come back next season and be like, but he talked to Carson Teva. Why I need to see my X-Wing missions or whatever. But I don't know that they would. I think they're thinking about the larger audience and not just, you know.
I don't think they are. I don't, because yeah. Season three was not made for the larger audience who just wanted to see Kmart, Boba Fett, and Baby Yoda fighting around. Like,
I don't know. You had IG-12 with the little Grogu steering him. Like, yes,
yeah,
no,
I mean,
yes,
there were,
no.
There were that, moments, that, but like, yeah. They could have leaned so much more into the mainstream audience appeal, and they did not. Like, they just, like, doubled down on, like, hardcore, like, yeah, I hope you watch the Clone Wars audience here, for better or worse.
Yeah. My camera died, so... Cool. I'm gone. So we should wrap up the show here probably in a second anyways, but we have to talk about the conclusion here. Din and Grogu at their little cabin that Greef Karga gives them. Yeah. I got to say, like, both times I watched the episode, I did find the last few minutes a little bit, like, kind of pulling me in a multiple different directions, so to speak, mm-hmm. I guess. I felt like it was a little disjointed. It's nice, but again, like, slightly disjointed to me, because the armor is like, you guys got to go off and have missions for Grogu. Like, Grogu, you need to take Grogu on his own journey. And then the very next thing that happens is Din's like, I don't know, maybe I could get some bounty hunting jobs for the New Republic, which doesn't really feel like Grogu going out on his journey. And then right after he's like, okay, I'm going to do some jobs for you, it's like, ah, cool, we're hanging out on the ranch and Grogu's playing, I'm fishing and Grogu's playing with frogs, you know? And I'm like, well, which of these things are we led to believe is going to be what's going to happen in the future? And I guess the obvious answer is all of those things.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But it's still just kind of, I didn't feel like it was the smoothest kind of narrative there at the end with like, boom, 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 all these different plates spinning in the air. It just felt kind of weird.
I think it worked for me in that the way like I kind of read these scenes is like, okay, yes, Grogu and Din Djarin are going to go on missions together. They're staying together. Like, they're going to still do things. Like, Din Djarin is not retiring. So I think, like, stamping that and then being like, okay, he's going to go back to, you know, the kind of work that he did, but he's going to do it for the New Republic, because, you know, I think that's important, because this is like part of his like character journey, is like he was doing work for like whoever, like it didn't matter, like a job was a job, and then now he's like, no, there's like, you know, there's bad people out here, there's I see this like threat of this like new empire. I want to, you know, I trust the new Republic. I trust Carson Teva. Like, this is who I want to do the work for. And I think that's like a great like character moment for Din Djarin. And then ending, like, yes, like we can have these jobs and like I can have my work, but like also like I've kept this kid like from going from mission to mission in the entire time he's been like in my custody. Now like we're just going to like hang out a little bit, and I thought that was just like a really pleasant way to end. Like, I think I prefer this than if they're like, all right, well, we're off to our next mission, and then, like, you know, they blast off into hyperspace kind of thing.
Well, I think it's pleasant, and in that regard, I think I like it in that regard, because this is, like I said, the conclusion of the season, I think, is really positive and ends in a really positive way. So I like it in that regard, but I still just feel like I didn't have a problem with any of the individual pieces. The problem to me is like, it just felt like a strange sequence of events where, you know, I just felt like, what are we focused on, or what am I supposed to be focused on, or whatever. I think very easily, just save the independent contractor for the New Republic scene until next season. Like, I don't feel like I understand why that needs to be there. It's a hint at what's going to happen in the next season, so maybe they want people to, like, know what they're going to do next season. But, you know, if you have the scene with the Mandalorians, it's like, you need to go on, be on your own journey, and then they stop on Nevarro, and he talks to Greef, and he's like, man, we're going to go on our own journey, but I just need to chill for a little bit. And Greef Karga's like, well, I got a nice little ranch you can chill on. And then they do. To me, that would make sense, because it would be like, yes, we're going to go on this journey with Grogu. I mean, honestly, maybe that's all it is. Maybe the scene with Greef Karga, maybe the dialogue could have been a little more like, you know, we are going to go do this stuff, but I just need to take a break. You know what I mean? Maybe that would have made it work more for me. But still, like, I think I definitely had whiplash when it was like, you got to take Grogu out on his own journey. He's got to discover himself. And then the next thing is like, can I get like work as for the New Republic? And I'm not saying that he shouldn't like do that, or that doesn't make sense for Din as a character to want to do that. But like, from one thing to the next feels like a 180. And I'm like, why did we need that at the end of this episode? I don't understand, really.
I don't know. Like, I didn't get the whiplash there. Cause to me, it just sort of made sense. Like, he's like, I'm going to kind of, in a sense, settle down to some degree with my son, but like, I also, you know, and part of that is like having steady work
mm-hmm.
and steady like employment. And
right, but the armorer telling him to go off and let Grogu have his journey doesn't sound like settling down with my son. It sounds like Grogu's got to go off and have a journey.
Right, but Grogu like can't do that for himself yet.
Yeah.
So like it still needs to be in like the care of Din Djarin.
Well, I should say I have not found one living human being who feels like this finale was disjointed like I do. So I'm sure I am the issue because I haven't seen one person feel this way. And nobody I've talked to anyways has felt this way. So
I mean, I've seen mixed reactions, and I think like I was reading some like critic reviews, and like those are like a little bit mixed, and some of the stuff are things that like you brought up too.
Oh, I've seen mixed reaction to the episode. What I'm saying is I haven't seen anybody specifically express like these last few moments and this sequence of events is weird. Nobody else seems to think that this stuff is weird, so I think it's got to be like something weird with my brain where like it just I processed it differently than most people did, because it seems to work for everybody else, which is good. I want it to work for everybody else, but for whatever reason, for me, it just, and I don't hate it. You know, I watched it the second time, but I, and this is probably not the best approach either, but I watched it the second time being like, can this be smooth? Like, you know, I went into it feeling like after the first viewing, this didn't work for me, but maybe if I watch it again, it'll work. And it just didn't really, I don't know. I mean, it's not offensive or anything. It just felt like three separate things that didn't relate to each other very much kind of all dropped at the end. But you know, I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying about like, you know, he needs work so that he can take care of Grogu, and you know, Din is the one who's obviously going to be making the choices about where they're going to go and what they're going to do and all that. So I think that does yeah, I can see that link between those things.
Yeah, and yeah. I think, like, something can be, like, logical, like, on paper. Because, like, to me, like, these, you know, these three sequences, like, they are, like, a logical progression. But, like, if it doesn't work for you, it doesn't work for you. Like,
yeah.
I mean, and that's fine. And I think it's also, like, okay to be critical of that for that reason, by under like you don't really need to have like a better reason than like this didn't work for me, like honestly. Yeah. So
yeah
nothing wrong with that.
All right, cool. Well, Ryan, I think we should wrap this episode up here.
Yeah, so for real.
Pretty exhaustive discussion of chapter 24. At least a couple things that we'll probably touch on next week, and maybe get into some Jedi Survivor impressions and things like that too. Our listener and friend, Rural Farm Boy, sent us a voicemail that I wanted to include in the show, but I don't think we're gonna have time for it here, and my camera died and the show's falling apart at the end here. So we will
talk about just disjointed conclusion.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Who am I to critique, right? So we will include that message from Rural Farm Boy next week. It's kind of about you know, the Mandalorian season 3 and people's reactions to it and stuff like that. So I think, you know, it'll be a good thing to talk about next week, as, you know, I don't think we're done thinking about the Mandalorian or its impact on us as or season 3, you know, even is done yet. So we'll talk about that next week, and like I said, probably some Jedi Survivor impressions and who knows what else. And then just a few days later, it'll be May 4th. So a lot of fun stuff on the horizon.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, cool. So until then, you can find all of our previous episodes, blog posts, etc. at blockaderunnerpodcast.com. And you can message the show, as Rural Farm Boy did, by emailing us, blockaderunnerpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow the show on Twitter, at blockaderun, or you can follow Ryan on Twitter, at
Vyamalay, Vyamalay, or Standard Definition Gaming, DefStan480.
Ryan, do you think Standard Definition Gaming will have some Star Wars game footage in the first week of May on that account? Is that something you're planning on?
Absolutely, and it's going to be tied in with the monthly theme for May, which is the Nintendo 64.
Oh my God. Okay, very good. So listeners should follow that account. What's the handle again, one more time?
DefStan480, DefStan480.
All right, right on. And I think I plug it inadvertently and intentionally multiple times throughout each episode, but our Discord is up and running, and a link to join that is in the show notes. So, you know, if anybody's interested, or if you're a Discord user, jump into our Discord by using the link in the show notes. So, with that said, until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Blockade Runner podcast.